we're here in the Logic-Free Zone of Washington, D.C., where we've been invited to participate in the 5th annual Hold Their Feet to the Fire Fandango put on by the Federation for Americans for Immigration Reform. Had some great conversations today with some very interesting folks. That's all going to take a turn for the better because my good friend from right up the road, an undisclosed location that's out of gun range of Washington, D.C. streets, author extraordinaire James Bovard joins me here at the hotel where this thing is being held. I wish I could remember the name of it. I'm sorry.
Phoenix Park Hotel.
That's what I was going to say. The Phoenix Park Hotel, and those are the dulcet tones of Mr. Bovard. Good to see you.
Well, thanks for having me on, Brian. Since you said this was a hold your feet to the fire rally, I made sure I wore my steel-toed boots.
You the man. You the man. I always count on you to be dressed for the occasion.
I've always been a fashion pioneer.
This is true. I remember at CPAC when you showed up with Jacob Hornberger wearing hip boots. That was also
hip boots. There you go. Okay, I was waiting to see where that went because I was thinking, what the hell was I wearing and how bad was it?
Actually, that was one of the one of those rare moments. If you recall, almost civilian-esque.
I was,
Oxford shirt. Remember, and the tie.
I think it was a.
You debated the Oxford part, as I recall.
It wasn't Oxford. It was more like from the, Holstein. It was Hanseatic.
It was Hanseatic. Okay.
It was North German fashion. It wasn't something which I bought for myself, and let's say the shirt's kind of old.
Understood.
Okay.
I was just going to go with L.L. Bean and let's.
Well, no. I'm not a well.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I was. We were talking when you first came in while the news was on. I was telling you. I don't know if I got through the story of the conversation with Congressman King about this whole business of illegal immigration and so on is. I'm happy to be here. It's great to see you, and we've had some very interesting conversations.
And you're right next to an Irish restaurant, which you love.
Yeah, known for their great food. I don't get the sense that illegal immigration is that big a deal unless you happen to be a border guard or an ICE agent, or your name is Brian Terry, that kind of thing, or your Janet Napolitano, wigged out on whatever it is she takes for medication, telling everybody how safe everything is.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure what Napolitano is taking, but it's not enough. this is kind of a non-issue right now. The Congress might be shutting down the government any day now, which would be great, except unless they pay the government employees for the days they go shopping, because that's what happened when Gingrich shut down the government. Really pissed me off. But the president launched another war, but it's okay because the UN approved. The economy, I guess we're borrowing money from China to bomb Libya, so that's, I guess that's our stimulus program. Nobody's really giving a damn about immigration right now, except here in this room.
Yeah, well, it's indeed true. China is too big to fail, so there's no, they're too big to do just about anything. But that's a good point about the Libyan situation. We were also talking before we went on the air, not to leave immigration per se in the dust, but there was an editorial in the WaPo today, and you said that their position was that they were disappointed with the war in Libya because we hadn't killed enough Libyans?
Right. The Washington Post is very upset that the U.S. has not done a lot more bombing of the Libyan ground troops, is what the Post is calling them. The Post wanted to see the U.S. using more of those C-130 planes, which I guess use the machine guns.
Baby Hueys. Can
cover the entire, football field and can kill everything in 100-yard almost length or radius. Washington Post wanted to see the U.S. using more of the A-10s, the tank killers. And it's just very upset that the, it's very important to protect Libyan civilians, the Post said, so we need to kill more Libyans as soon as possible.
You've got that on your website, which I thought was quite excellent, a poster for hypocrisy, showing a passel of dead Libyan civilians.
I'm not sure if those were Libyan. They were just dead somebody.
Dead people?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, they were dead foreigners.
Okay.
They were certainly not from Cleveland.
No, No. I can tell by the dress, you know, by themselves.
There's that certain Cleveland fashion.
Yeah.
Folks dress like the mistake on the lake.
Well, you can't be too careful. That river can catch fire just like that.
Well, you know, folks wear a lot of asbestos pajamas.
Exactly.
That's the thing.
That is correct, sir. This whole business, I was talking with this lady, Mary Woods, a moment ago, the former head of ICE.
Okay.
Leaving just as you came in.
I was going to make a play on the hot lady from ICE, but, you know, that's kind of crude.
No, actually, I kind of like that. I thought about that. Let me write that down.
Right.
She may be back tomorrow. Julie Myers Wood. Talking about the use of force, you know, government force in trying to intimidate businesses into not hiring illegal immigrants.
Uh-huh.
And that I tried to engage her in a conversation about government as force, as opposed to persuasion, you know, and that kind of thing.
Yeah, ICE.
Yeah.
Immigration agents are known for their persuasive ability, you know.
Well, now that she was in the private sector, I thought there might be some, I don't know, maybe the light had shone a little bit. I mean, she got it. She was okay with it. But, I mean, you know, if you're going to enforce laws, you know, enforce, the key word force, you're not going to be able to get too far with persuasion, you know, and incentive programs as you can with a big guy with a, you know, couple of guns.
Well, and ICE has got a reputation for just some horrendous abuses. The Washington Post, I mean, it was so obvious, even the Washington Post noticed. They've had a couple stories about how the ICE agents in this area had quotas for arrests. And what they would do is just kind of go to places where they knew that immigrants were, and they would round them up even if they were legal.
Oh.
And so there've been a lot of illegal immigrants here that were, caught in these ICE dragnets simply so that ICE could meet their body count for arrest.
Mm-hmm.
And that I don't know if that's happening elsewhere in the U.S., but Congress is doing, as almost with every other federal law enforcement agency, Congress does a horrible job of oversight, and most congressmen only care about having your picture taken with the G-men. So,
well, maybe they're in some sort of competition with the folks from BATF.
There you go. There's the annual cluster screw-up award,
mm-hmm.
I mean, which federal agencies get. I mean, and that's something that looks great in your resume, you know, cluster screw-up mm-hmm. of the year.
Yeah. Well, I guess. I don't think I really knew it under those terms, but I understand the need for tact. But when I look at TSA, BATF, ICE, and, of course, the usual guys, you know, the
FBI,
you know, and their folks, some elements of the IRS, the DEA.
Uh-huh.
You get an awful lot of cracked heads, courtesy of your federal government.
Well, yeah, and you have to wonder what kind of crackheads are making the policy.
Mm-hmm.
And something I'd love to do is, go over, a couple hundred yards from here and find a way to buttonhole your average congressman and, you know, ask him 15 questions about these agencies as far as what they're doing, what their policies are, whether they've been involved in recent abuses. Because I bet the average congressman doesn't know crap about what these agencies are doing, and the congressmen don't care. Congressmen simply don't pay attention to the abuses of federal agencies, especially when they're law enforcement, especially when they have the sheen of good deeds. This is partly because of all the stupid TV programs, which are always portraying government agents as, you know, angels and saviors. I mean, it's a heck of a change from how the movies portrayed government agents 40 or 50 years ago when they were often the villains.
Yeah, but isn't it also a great safety precaution to not know? Ignorance? You know, gee, it's not my department. Agriculture and subsidies.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing for the average citizen you can understand, but these congressmen are morally responsible for everything the federal government does to you. And there's congressmen I've talked to about the torture scandal and stuff like that, and their eyes glaze over and they ask questions that look like they are so ignorant that they apparently don't even read the newspaper headlines. And, you know, by doing that, they have absolved themselves. But, you know, it's an outrage for congressmen to be able to escape responsibility for the abuses of the government, because this is their government, this is their, you know, this is their baby. So
I get the sense that if they're not sitting on that subcommittee, that if they don't have that specific oversight, then that's their out. Like I was saying, kind of tongue-in-cheek, well, I'm on the agriculture subcommittee. I'm only worried about agriculture subsidies. I couldn't possibly be concerned about what's going on the border or what's going on in the barrio or what's going on at Guadalcanal or any other place.
Well, I mean, I think you're right, except for your assumption that the people in the subcommittee would know what was going on. And I'm serious.
I've been to a few of those meetings.
You sit there and you think for the love of God, but part of it is that the congressmen don't care about the abuses because what they want to get is more hiring in their district or get some kind of contract to a buddy of theirs or something like that. Congressmen there's this fantasy of theory of civics that congressmen care about government abuses. It's like me caring about, it's as illogical as assuming that I would care about the winning lottery number. I don't play the lottery. Congressmen don't care about the abuses.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. In just a little while, Lamar Smith is going to be here. Steve King, the gentleman with whom I spoke. Charles Grassley is going to be. Stop if you anyone here you particularly like to get your hands on. David Vitter will be.
David Vitter. So are they having some special entertainment with special clothing attire for that one?
Well, I haven't had it. It's not in his bio.
It's not in his bio. Check online. I'm sure that part of his bio is all over, and maybe there are even pictures. I don't know.
There could be. Let me, if we can get to a printer, that might be very, Jack Kingston is going to be on board. Lou Barletta from Pennsylvania. Dana Rohrabacher.
He's an interesting fellow. He's good on some issues.
Yep. The only other fellow that was going to drop by and still may to have a little chat with us is Congressman West.
Alan West
from Florida, yes.
Good old Alan West.
Yeah, well, he lit him up at CPAC, as you well know.
There's a book I heard about called Attention Deficit Democracy.
And the
popularity of West. West did something in the last week or so. What the hell was it? I know why West would appeal to this, because the first chief of staff that West hired was a talk show host down in Florida who had publicly advocated hanging any illegal alien who was accused of a crime. And if you're an illegal alien, that's a crime. So, you know, it would have been really good for rope sales, though it might have put some stress on street lamps.
True. But as I recall, she did a U-turn and abdicated her job offer.
Right. She was, there was too much heat for that. She was unusual on a number of her positions. But West has done some things. I'm trying to think what it was, but there's a couple of things he's done recently, maybe on Libya or the U.S. foreign policy, that just make me think.
We'll give it a couple of seconds. We'll get back to it. We're spending a couple of extra minutes with my friend, author extraordinaire James Bovard, author of Attention Deficit Democracy and other fun things that'll let you in on just the wild and woolly stuff that's going on with your government from so many great perspectives. Here is the thing, Jim. It does seem consistent, especially after reading so many of your books, that there doesn't appear to be any real interest in the part of this government, this administration, or any administration for that matter, because you've written about the Bush administration, the Clinton administration, et cetera, to actually advance freedom, liberty, the republic. You know, this is all just a kerfuffle. It's just like this stupid tug of war that they're having now over the budget. It has nothing to do with the budget. It has everything to do with who's going to wind up getting blamed for it. Is the public going to blame the Republicans or the Democrats? So screw the tipping point of the economic reality with respect to where we are with this government and the Federal Reserve and all the rest. This is all about image. It's all about PR.
Well, the point you made about the this administration not caring about liberty, or the previous one either, or the previous ones, I mean, people have to recognize that for politicians, individual freedom is the leash on them. Politicians want to be unleashed, so if they politicians have to respect freedom, they're not going to enjoy their job as much. Seriously, because it puts a limit on their power. Politicians, people go into politics because they like power. And because of that, those folks tend to have contempt for limits on their power, and individual liberty is perhaps the most important limit on politicians' power. That and the Federal Reserve.
But. Yeah, that's a whole other subject. Well, it's just something that needs to be
reminded. People need to be reminded of it from time to time, because they, you know, because you get into this and you actually start thinking that there might be a solution.
That, you know, it's our team versus their team.
Yeah.
Oh boy, because our team got a first down, and oh my goodness, we got a new quarterback.
Go
and
fight, win.
Hot damn! And you know, we're just so close to turning the corner, and oh, we got screwed again.
Yeah, so there's another corner.
Yes.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Well, there you go. All right, that's it. We got the news thing coming up here in just a second. Always great to see you, James.
Hey, well, thanks for having me on. I appreciate
come
that.
Come down here and raise a little dust. That's what a hoot. We ought to take over NPR. We have a whole hour.
Yeah, I'm sure that they'd love both of us.
Well, so. I didn't say that any of the old guard would stay behind.
I can make some old jokes. How about
hey,
that?
Hey, there you go. Jim Bovard, Attention Deficit Democracy, available in paperback at a bookstore near you, maybe even Barnes & Noble. Just make sure it says James Bovard as the author. Let's move along here. 5:28, 28 after the hour. Let's see. That would mean that the news, some traffic, some weather, and sports director Shaggy Mac Culbreth will wrap his big panda-like arms around all the latest sports news and present them in a coherent and articulate fashion. And then this nonsense will continue when we talk to Fred in approximately 5 minutes here on your talk station, 1370 WSBD.